okay.
Time to grab a cup of coffee, sit down, and strap yourself in. If you want to talk cars, here he comes, the car guy, Steve Ford.
Hello and welcome to another segment of the Car Guy Show here, coming at you from the broadcast tower of News Talk 990 KTMS and via multimedia inside the automotive world via the website, thecarguy.com. We're connecting you with automotive consumer and enthusiast news, insights, and interviews anywhere you're hearing our signal in Santa Barbara and the surrounding communities. In today's program, the topic we're going to take into our virtual shop to put up on the lift is another one of our car culture educational adventures backward in time, as far back as more than 116 years, to be exact. Now, where our upcoming guest is going to take us, he chronicles the evolution of the automotive climate control from the earliest heaters in open-air self-propelled carriages right up to where we are today in 2013. And for all you car gals out there who enjoy celebrating some cool contributions by women at the wheel, here's a sample of the upcoming show.
People would be interested to know that the first patent for a windshield wiper was by a woman named Mary Anderson in 1903.
And that's a good trivia question for one of our future gift giveaway questions when we do that ahead. Now, that was, again, 110 years ago, 1903, that Mary Anderson was one of the first inventors to help us on the road to where we are today with what we can almost take for granted. Plus, we'll talk about the first automobile air conditioner introduced. It was back in 1940. And that's another fun trivia question. All this and more coming up straight ahead in this segment of the Car Guy Show. And hey, do you remember a few weeks back when we visited here on the show talking about the Mullen Automotive Museum with Mr. Peter Mullen about his stable of Bugattis? Well, speaking of Bugattis and trivia, how about I give you one of the best trivia questions you'll ever hear? Can you name any royalty who ever owned a Bugatti Royale? Now, wouldn't you love to be one of the world's elite royalty and pull up in a Bugatti Model Royale? Okay, I promise I'll give you that answer. But first, let's go out to a break. And when we come back, I'll tell you who owned a Bugatti Royale. And then we'll join our special guest, Mr. Gene Dickerson, for a deep dive into automotive culture and the roots of creature comforts. You're tuned to News Talk 990 with the Car Guy Show.
You.
Yeah, you stock serpentine belts?
Serpentine? What do you have, a snake under your hood? Parts counter, what's up?
Yeah, I need pads and rotors for an 02 Ford Mustang.
Pads and a distributor rotor? You mean pads and drums?
No, pads and rotors. I think I'll try a few more calls.
Larry's Auto Parts, Phil.
I'm looking for pads and front rotors for an 02 Mustang.
Okay, we stocked the pads. What's your concern on the rotors?
Sounds like the pads have just hit metal.
Well, bring them in and let's measure them. There's a good chance we can machine them for a fresh surface and save you money, too.
Well, yeah. Hey, what about windshield wipers?
Well, we stock wipers and we offer free installation. And in most cases, just the refills without buying the entire blade.
More than auto parts, more than service. Along with a national CarQuest brand. Expertise you experience every visit. Larry's 8-Day Auto Parts, Old Town Goleta, 964-3545. That's 964-3545.
I'm Larry's Auto Parts owner, Phil Unander. Our team is here to be your solution.
So you're one of those lucky car enthusiasts who has the privilege of owning a rare, vintage, antique, or maybe one of those British specialty cars, the kind that makes heads turn and brings compliments at stoplights. Let's say a Model A Ford, a 29 Buick, or one of those stunning Packards from the 1930s. But one of the challenges of these rare vehicles is finding an auto professional who can wake up that historic machine so the engine will sing that special tune, or have headlights that both glow equally, maybe just an old-fashioned tune-up the way it used to be, or even servicing that other ancient device, a carburetor. Sounds like a long time ago? Not at East West Motors, where servicing, repairing, and reviving mechanical gems is a daily craft. Owned and operated by a veteran Conquer d'Elegance judge who knows what 100-point quality looks like. At East West Motors, you experience what 100-point collector car service feels like. Call 965-7003. That's 965-7003. It's the best shop this side of Radiator Springs.
My name is Roy Miller, and I approve of this message.
Hey, you know about getting the job done right. If you want it done right, do it yourself. Well, that's what Car and Truck Buffs, owners of classics, custom cars, and wise consumers know when they visit Daily Car Bath, Santa Barbara's downtown coin-operated car wash supercenter for more than 40 years. After discovering Daily Car Bath for my own cars, I've returned to give my machines the superior wash and cleaning care that all car buffs appreciate. At Daily Car Bath, you'll find premium hog's hair wash brushes with conditioned soft water and five stall with foaming high-sudsing auto shampoo that literally floats debris off your vehicle's finish, along with consistent high-pressure washing and available non-acid low-pressure wheel and tire cleaner. And for that special finish, DINI spot-free rinse to help dissolve and eliminate mineral spot and spray wax formulated with clear coat protectant included in the cycle. See why Daily Car Bath is known as the place where customers send their friends. And take it from a fellow car buff. When it comes to the best in car care appearance, you'll find it all at Daily Car Bath. Open 24 hours a day at the corner of Anacapa and Cota Streets. Quality, economy, and that showroom shine.
When it comes to keeping your wheels looking like new, whether you're a passionate car buff or a daily commuter who simply seeks the best in value and integrity, there's a name in Santa Barbara that fits both profiles. Tri-County Auto Glass. Today's auto glass installers all have to service more sophisticated and precise automobiles than just a decade ago. And while the majority of auto glass businesses have state-of-the-art tools and equipment, what we all know is harder to find are the industry-certified craftspeople and the highest levels of customer service, which is why Tri-County Glass customers range from Concord Elegance level show car owners to everyday family sedan and pickup truck owners. Rock chip repairs or glass replacement with lifetime repair credit and 30 years in Santa Barbara, while a positive word of mouth reputation may bring you in, courtesy quality and that new window glass shine will bring you back. Tri-County Auto Glass, downtown Santa Barbara. Call them or stop in for a quote on a window repair or replacement today. 963-6200. That's 963-6200.
I'm Scott Budo, owner, manager, and a certified auto glass technician. At Tri-County Auto Glass, we are about quality, safety, and value.
And we are back with you. Okay, before the break, I promised to tell you the name of any royalty who ever owned a Bugatti Royale. Hey, are you ready for this? Crazy as it may sound, no royalty ever owned any of the seven Bugatti Royales. So, if you're royalty, that's good news. You can still be the first to own a Bugatti Royale. All right. Let's get serious and move over to join our guest talking about the roots of automotive creature comforts. Let's join Gene Dickerson. Welcome to the Car Guys Show.
Thank you, Steve. Glad to be here.
It's neat to connect with you across the phone lines from Motown to Southern California here on the coast. And tell you, first of all, I hope you're hanging in there in this winter weather. And we're talking from sunshine in California, typically, so I don't want to feel guilty. I'll just tell you that I do understand Detroit, having lived there for 5 years.
Yes.
Gene, your book, Automotive Climate Control, 116 Years of Progress. Tell us, if you would, you worked for Ford Motor Company. As an engineer, you were introduced to much of the technology close up. How did you become a person so focused on climate control? What was your role at Ford Motor Company, and what's the bridge between that and writing this book?
Okay. I tell people I was born and raised at building number 5 at Ford Motor Company Engineering. Very briefly, in the beginning, I've always been a car guy. I've been interested in cars ever since I was a little boy.
Right.
And I thought I wanted to be an automobile stylist. So in high school, I focused on art courses and not very much on mathematics. I did art and also drafting. And as I said, I wanted to be a stylist, I thought. And my strategy was, when I finished high school, I was going to go to the Art Center school there in L.A.
So your interest in art in high school really doesn't sound like the pathway that would lead you into an engineering job. What's the connection between what happened when you went out of high school and to get to become an engineer?
I went to the Art Center school in L.A. and talked to them, and they convinced me that I needed some additional work before I could even apply.
Pretty high standards.
That is correct. Yeah. A very, very high standard. Yeah. I decided that if I'd studied a long time, I'd never be a good artist like those people. So I decided to pursue drafting, which I'd studied in high school,
right,
and went to Vincennes University, got a two-year degree in drafting technology, applied at several car companies, including Ford and General Motors.
So you become an engineer after what? You go to the, you get the drafting two-year degree. And
well,
then
yes, I went to got the drafting two-year degree. Mm-hmm. With that and my portfolio, Ford Motor Company made me an offer of a real drafting job. I went to night school for 10 years to get my engineering degree. Challenging way to do it. I had a family.
Yeah.
I was working overtime.
Dedicated guy.
Night school.
Yeah, congratulations. So
thank
then once you got your degree, what department did you go into, and what's the connection between your degree and...
I worked in a department that did all the accessories, including climate control, heating, air conditioning, and that's where I worked almost my entire engineering career, climate control division, product engineering office.
And you were a mechanical engineer? Was that your degree, mechanical engineer?
That is correct.
Okay. What was the connection then that jumps us over to you writing a book?
The connection was, Steve, that... in the climate control product engineering office, we developed something called the Climate Control University, which was where small, each of us instructors picked a topic and we put together the class materials.
From your teaching inside of Ford Motor Company and helping train young people to understand the history of what came before them, before they arrived on the planet, right?
Right. Yep.
Okay. Now, I looked at some of the material inside the book, and I was struck by some of the historic landmarks. I wonder if you could just help us understand. And folks, we're talking to a gentleman, if you just joined us, Gene Dickerson, who wrote the book Automotive Climate Control, 116 Years of Progress. Gene, it's a very narrow topic, but I think the audience can appreciate. Back in 1900, people were driving in open vehicles that were just a little bit more advanced than a carriage with a horse. So can you hit some highlights for the everyday motorist? Tell us some highlights. I know, for example, there was a Lehman ad in 1901, talks about a coal heater, but it wasn't until February of 1907 that you saw the first ad in Motor Magazine for a heater that could be purchased as an accessory. And then lap robes were popular in 1908. All these things about the open car.
Sure. You bring up a good point, Steve. In the beginning, automobiles were essentially wagons without horses and with small gasoline engines.
Right.
And the main focus at that era, of course, was going forward and stopping and turning. They were that was a focus of the engineers at that point in time.
It was not creature comfort.
That there was no creature comforts, so the way to stay warm in that era was lap robes, heavy coats, and goggles, and something called a charcoal heater.
Right. So you go from heaters and lap robes, it's basically clothing and very crude heaters for basically, it sounds like, your legs, your arms. And I even read in your early pages of the book that people could buy electric heated gloves. So we're talking about basically sitting on a park bench with four wheels driving down the road. And if it's winter in the car and where you're sitting. If it's snowing in your face.
That is correct.
So, So what happens? Let's say that's 1900 to 1910. What are some of the things people can appreciate that we all take for granted today? After 1910, what are the landmark things that happen? When do we get a closed car? When do we get ventilation? When do we get windshield wipers?
People would be interested to know that the first patent for a windshield wiper was by a woman named Mary Anderson in 1903. So that was kind of a little interesting sidebar.
Yeah.
The way it evolved was... after the lap robes and the charcoal heaters, we get into specific devices for automobiles. And the very first automobile-specific heater was 1907. It was a device that relied on the exhaust heat of the vehicle. This device essentially wrapped a shell around the muffler of the vehicle, and it had a duct that fed distribution inside the vehicle. And
so exhaust heat, and then that took us into those early devices that were accessories back then, right?
That is correct. Oh, yeah. Everything was aftermarket.
When the car got closed, it changed it all.
That's correct. The one of the earliest examples of a closed car was 1908. The 1908 Franklin was closed by adding storm curtains to the convertible top. They added canvas curtains to the side. The first car to be fitted with a heater, closed car from the factory, first factory heated car, was the 1917 Jordan.
Wow, that was a landmark then.
That was a landmark,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. What's the next landmark?
Really, hot water heaters, because, as I said, prior to this, everything had been related to the exhaust system, and hot water heaters were introduced in the late 1920s.
So in the late 20s, they used coolant from the engine inside the engine compartment, inside the passenger compartment. And then,
that's
so
correct.
When do we go, those are heaters so far. And then we have air conditioning. We have later, the closed car introduces the opportunity for a more sophisticated heater inside the vehicle. What happens between, like, what year is that the heater gets introduced?
1928. We see air conditioning and...
Starts with ventilation, right?
This was a big deal.
Yeah.
The first air conditioner was released on the 1940 Packard.
Okay.
It was engineered and fitted to the vehicle by a company called Bishop and Babcock out of Ohio.
Yeah.
This was really a major, major milestone. Before that, all the cooling was through ventilation.
Right. And so first air conditioner.
The refrigerant was the Freon 12, as we know it today.
So the Freon was introduced into the vehicle by Packard in 1940.
That's correct.
Okay. And so what you go from there, Packard celebrated as an engineering marvel, probably.
That's correct. Although it was interesting that the public was not really enamored with these first air conditioning systems. The first system was the 40 Packard, and between 40 and 41, they only sold a little over 2,000 of these air-conditioned vehicles. We can't understand that today, but in the beginning it was crude, it was hard to control. The duct, air conditioning duct, was through the rear package shelf, and it chilled the necks of the rear seat passengers. And
so it wasn't really successful and popular, but it evolved. What's next after? So Packard introduces air conditioning. When do we see the next milestone in climate control?
We've got to stop for the war. From 42 to 47, nothing happened as far as automobile technology goes.
There was, sure, everything's on hold.
Everything was dedicated to the war effort.
Yeah.
The next air conditioning application was 1953. The war had been over for several years, but the engineers were focused on getting vehicles back into production. Chrysler, Lincoln, and Cadillac introduced air conditioning. Packard did not reintroduce air conditioning until 1954.
So as the air conditioning evolved, those years between 42 and 47, it was, you know, obviously World War II. But the technology evolves after that, and the 1950s becomes another surge of technology. What are the landmarks between the 50s and today?
Well, one of the landmarks was the 1953 vehicles did not, believe it or not, did not have what we call electromagnetic clutches, which you could control the compressor with.
Turn it on and off.
Compressors ran all the time. In the 40s, the 1940 Packard and Cadillac, or 41 Cadillac, did not have electromagnetic clutches. You had to remove the belt in the winter time. And the 53 vehicles also did not have electromagnetic clutches.
So in the summer, they'd be driving with the compressor, be pumping all the time.
That is correct. And even so, those 53 models, it was recommended that the belt be removed in the winter time.
But in the meantime, what was going on? The compressor was going through its motions, working its tail off and draining the engine of power then.
That is correct, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what do we take for granted today? Obviously, you must look at cars today and just crack up with your knowledge, because you know each incremental evolutionary engineering step was something to solve these early problems. I did not know that early air conditioners were in effect, for people listening, we're talking about air conditioning in cars being introduced in the 1940 Packard originally, but even into the 50s, the AC system was essentially on all the time, right?
That is correct. And the first time in 53, the system was on all the time.
Okay.
As soon as 54, things started changing rapidly.
Okay.
The 53 vehicles had what we call the evaporator assembly in the trunk of the car, the same as the 40 Packard, the 41 Cadillac. It took up a lot of luggage space. The air came out of the rear package shelf.
So that was like a refrigerator. That was where the cooling went on, was in the trunk.
That is correct.
Okay,
yes.
Big fins, big fins on what you'd call a heat exchanger, which is that thing with all the fins on it.
That is correct.
The Freon goes through. So
correct.
what You said 54, something happened in the mid-50s.
54, something happened. The Pontiac introduced the evaporator assembly mounted to the cowl of the vehicle between the engine compartment and the passenger compartment. They had Pontiac moved the evaporator assembly to the, in the car business, we call it the dash panel.
Right.
And people confuse it with what most people call the dash of the car. We call it the instrument panel.
But right.
Anyway, the evaporator assembly moved to the dash panel on the 54 Pontiac, and it also moved to the dash panel on the 54 Nash.
So
a lot of your listeners probably don't even know what a Nash is.
Yeah, right, right. But of course, so a Nash being a brand that went away, but was teamed up, I think, with Rambler before it disappeared, right?
That's correct. Yeah,
okay.
It emerged with American Motors.
Right.
And it's interesting to note that the a review of the 1955 Nash air conditioning system, the writer in Motor Trend magazine felt it was the best air conditioning system available.
Yeah.
I'll quote, it says, "In fact, many consider it the finest automobile air conditioner available. It sold for $395 on the 1955 Nash."
And it was the coolest thing on the, it was the big hit at the car shows, right?
Oh,
I'm kidding. You know, that technology.
Again, it was, by then, the controls were more sophisticated.
Sure.
The systems were approaching the comfort levels that we have today.
And the folks would appreciate that we did note that the early air conditioners, the heat exchanger, as we'd call it, or the coolant, the refrigerant assembly with the fins on it, which I know there's a technical name of heat exchanger, but basically folks would realize the air is sent through this large thing in the trunk that was that needed to be made much more compact by Pontiac and then Nash to put it in the dash area. Behind the instrument panel and yet in front of the firewall in the passenger space.
That is correct. Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So the firewall being the back portion of under the hood of your car, and then the instrument panel being what you see. In between what you see and the firewall is where you would say that was planted. To make it compact was probably a big engineering feat for Pontiac. So if we go into the 1960s, we see some of the early automatic controls. Am I right?
That is correct. The 1964 Cadillac introduced what they called comfort control, which was an electronic automatic temperature control, which is what most many vehicles are fitted with today.
Sure.
You set the lever to automatic, you dial in the temperature you want, and then you listen to your radio or do whatever else you're going to do, but you don't think about touching the heating and air conditioning controls.
It theoretically does what it's supposed to do. Now, let me back up. I missed something here. I didn't do you service or the audience service. I didn't ask you, when did we get the clutch on the compressor so that the compressor of an air conditioner wasn't always operating off a belt drive of the engine?
In 1954. Most of the 1954 models were fitted with an electromagnetic clutch.
So that must have been a real hit for the engineering community.
Well, it was, absolutely. The it was a big deal.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a major milestone was the electromagnetic
and
clutch.
Tell me something. When you marketed the clutch compressor, you know, I wouldn't get excited about air conditioning if I were a car guy in the 50s. Or a car gal, you know what I mean? But as an engineer, you folks were probably high-fiving in the hallways that you guys were doing something cool. Now tell me, how did you package selling the clutch compressor to the general public?
Well, actually, it was before my time.
Okay, I'm sorry. You were there in the 1960s, but forgive me.
63 was when I started.
What year?
1963.
All right. So, but still, you know, let me rephrase the question. You didn't get excited about the compressor clutch because you were still a puppy. But when you got older, you're working in Ford Motor Company as an engineer. Did you gentlemen and gals get excited in your department when you had a breakthrough on this kind of a level that you'd want the marketing department to know about?
Sure. But just so that your audience knows, selling ideas in the automobile industry is like selling movies in Hollywood.
Yeah,
it takes a lot of research and effort, and a lot of times engineers will lay their careers on the line to take a chance.
Yeah.
On making a big change.
Sure,
Steve. So, did the engineers high five in the halls when the clutch was introduced? Probably not.
Yeah.
You got to know engineers; they just don't get that excited about these things.
Okay.
But they are proud of the work that they've done.
Yeah.
And
I just wanted to ask that question. So, thank you. I appreciate what you're saying. Engineers are focused and methodical, And yet, I imagine if I would come home to my wife and kids at the dinner table and say, hey, today I invented the clutch for the compressor, they might look at me with blank stares, but I'd be excited about it, you know?
Yeah. In fact, just a little quick sidebar, my engineering colleague and I were kidding about that yesterday or the day before, coming back from that Ford Retired Engineers luncheon.
Yeah.
We talked about how the families could not relate to exactly what the engineers do at work. They knew they went to work at Ford's,
right,
and they brought home the paycheck,
right,
but what happened at Ford's or at GM?
Yeah. Or Chrysler?
The families didn't care.
Yeah. I appreciate that, but with your fellow engineering buddies, you can all enjoy that. Hey, so from today in 2013, what would you like the audience to understand? There, we couldn't do justice to the 500 pages worth of your writing. The book you've written,
Automotive Climate Control, 116 Years of Progress,
is available on Amazon, and you are Gene Dickerson, and I should note that's spelled with D-I-C-K-I-R-S-O-N. If anybody wants to take a look at your book on Amazon, there's some pages. You can flip pages through and learn some of the landmark steps.
That's correct.
What would you like the audience to know today, Gene, about driving a 2013 vehicle? What do you want us not to take for granted?
Well, they should know that air conditioning is now standard on essentially every car.
Right.
When I wrote my book last year, I did research, and I only found three or four vehicles marketed in the United States that did not offer air conditioning on the base model.
Right.
So it was the price leaders, the low-priced vehicles, did not offer air conditioning. Otherwise, it's available. It's standard equipment on every automobile sold in the United States now.
Yeah.
The state of the art is exemplified by the Lexus systems. I've done some research, and I'm a Ford guy, but the Lexus is really state of the art.
Yeah. What makes it stand out?
Well, they have something called glow plugs in the coolant hoses, so they can heat the coolant very, very fast to get a very fast warm-up. They have humidity sensors. They have micro dust and pollen filters, which are pretty common. They have something called smog sensors, which I know the problem is mostly gone in L.A. now, but they have smog sensors, heated and ventilated front seats.
The most. It sounds like the most comprehensive creature comforts, state of the art for this 21st century.
And the thing that's really interesting, Steve, is they have four zone control. In other words, the two people in the front, the two people in the back, can select their own temperature.
Now we've had that since like the 70s, not in that sophisticated a level, but we had split controls right in the 70s.
That is correct.
But
yes.
not four place separation.
That is correct. This four place is very recent.
That's interesting.
So
well, that's That's honorable of you to give a salute to Lexus when you're a Ford guy.
Well, the Lincoln and Ford cars have very sophisticated, very comfortable systems. But the Lexus has gone
a couple of steps
beyond to to do everything they know to do to sell cars.
Yeah, and make people comfortable, you know? Well, Gene Dickerson, I wish, again, we had much more time, but for the audience to get their history lesson, and for young folks, as you might want to put it, to be reminded that something happened before they arrived on the planet, with all due respect to youth, and I'm one of them to you, with respect to you having experienced years before I arrived on the scene, for myself and for the audience, I just want to thank you for your time and for your book, Automotive Climate Control, 116 Years of Progress.
Well, it's my pleasure, Steve, and I've enjoyed talking to you, and
I
hope your audience appreciates it, and they can look at the book on Amazon, and they can leaf through it on Amazon, and if they're interested, they can buy it with one mouse click, as you know.
Absolutely, and a note for people is that it's 500 pages, so it might not be something that's going to be your leisurely reading, but for any school, automotive training department, and for certainly engineers who are into climate control, this is a very important manuscript that you turned into a bound publication for sale internationally via Amazon. So Gene Dickerson on behalf of the audience and myself and the automotive industry for your landmark book on climate control. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And thank you all for joining us for this segment on the World of Wheels, and this brings us to the close of another visit with all of you here on the Car Guy Show. Join us here again next week for another segment from the Coastal Riviera right here in Santa Barbara on News Talk 990 KTMS and thecarguy.com. Keeping you car wise, I'm Steve Ford, the Car Guy.